Living in America used to be a dream. For so many people far away and unseen, with their big cars and movie stars, living in America, all hail to the red, white, and blue. Living in America was a dream. In this land they tell you to reach for anything you want, and everything is possible, just believe that you can. Cause we're God's chosen children, living in America with that long house and my picket fences, living in America.
Hi everybody, this is Richard Sacks. I'm your host on Lost Arts Radio. Nice to be with you again. We have a special treat tonight, as I think that you will appreciate. And I just got to tell you how the particular show came about for a minute, and then we'll get into it. In the midst of this situation that we're all in, that people are calling a pandemic, and we agree the virus is real, it was made in a lab, those things are all correct. But what it's being used for is much bigger. It's a global attack on God-given freedoms and rights that everybody has, no matter what country they live in. And those are acknowledged in the founding documents of America. But it says right there that it doesn't matter about your government. You've got the rights anyway. And you have to be kind of careful if your government doesn't agree with you. But so as this psychological operation gets carried out globally in a slightly different style in each country, you know, we've been watching that, talking about it, having people on the shows that are aware of that from various perspectives. And I saw a great video of this medical doctor who was one of the medical doctors that is conscious even after medical school, which is really a feat for various reasons. And I have great admiration and appreciation for that by itself. But what she was saying was even better, which was that we'll get into this, but there's dishonesty on the part of venerated agencies that are considered in academia to be infallible sources of truth. And that's hard for people to grasp, but it's a little insight into what's happening. So I was hoping, even though she's known all over the place now because of the success of that video, that she might be willing to come and share it with us for a little while. So that's Annie Bukacek, and she said yes, which was great. And she's here with us tonight. And I think we're going to have a super interesting, very relevant, useful discussion that everybody needs to pay a lot of attention to. So welcome, Dr. Bukacek. I'm really honored that you're here and looking forward to what you have to share. So thank you.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm the one that's honored to be here.
So, you know, what I like to do with these shows is bring in people that are not necessarily in the group that knows everything that's going on, because the people that need it in addition to those people are ones that are just barely beginning enough to want to watch a show like this to have an idea that there's more to the picture than it meets the eye. So I want to go back far enough, maybe a little bit into your background if you're open to it. Where you've come from. I didn't say anything about your bio, partly because we just met each other, but partly because I want you to emphasize the parts of it that are most important for people to get the whole picture, and then see how you've come from your conventional training to being open to something on the bigger picture like this, whatever you want to give for background.
Okay. Well, probably first and foremost, my parents, they raised us, they had seven children, and they raised us all to think for ourselves and to always question authority and to question sources. So I've always been that kind of person, to think for myself.
Wow.
And I've never been somebody whose peer pressure doesn't touch me. It never did when I was in grade school. It certainly doesn't now. So that I give my parents credit for that.
Very rare these days, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate to be raised by parents like that. So then I want to skip to, so 15, 20 years ago, something like that, when I started recognizing that things are not what they appear to be, listening to a lot of, you know, Ron Paul and people like that. Mm-hmm. And then in 2009, a patient of mine taught me about the vaccine industry and the corruption of that. And that's a whole other story, I realize. I'm just going to talk about it briefly. But they never taught us, physicians, about the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. We were never taught about that. But right. A patient of mine, she came in, her grandchild, who was 3 or 4 months old, perfectly healthy. You're supposed to be healthy when you get vaccines. So perfectly healthy child got vaccinated and then screamed for 3 days and then died. Yes. Wow. So this grandmother, she brought in not just that horrible story, but brought in, you know, 2 or 3 inches of paperwork about what the government is doing in the National Vaccine Compensation Program. And I was just appalled that I'd never heard about it. So she got me questioning the CDC and the things that I'm being told and not being told by some of the organizations. So that was a big piece. That was 2009.
Okay.
And then 2012 in my town came, the pertussis was in the newspaper every day, you know, the 100-day cough, pertussis in big letters and exclamation mark and all that. Yeah. So I wrote a letter to the editor about it. And then one of the doctors that was on the board came back. He and I went back and forth for 4 months, and he was very nasty, very degrading, told me, you know, called me all kinds of names and said I was incompetent. And I tried to be professional, and I think I maintained that pretty well. And then the editor finally called me and he said, Annie, would you please stop this? You know, people are getting sick of it, you know. And I said, tell him to stop. I said, I'm just giving factual information. I'm just responding. Tell him to stop. Put our last letters, his and mine, on the same day, and then don't print anymore. And so that's what they did. So that was another eye opener in terms of how doctors treat doctors that don't toe the line. So that was 2012. And then, you know, 2008, 2009 was H1N1, and that was, so it was right around that same period of time that my eyes were being opened, and then I saw what they did with that, and I paid attention to what they did with that and what the outcome was, and the outcome, you know, they scared people, and then they ended up mandated in the next year's flu vaccines, all right? And then within a year or two after that, Ebola came out. Right. You know, and they would talk about how the guts rupture, and they'd show these horrible looking pictures, and people walk around in hazmat suits and gloves and all that. To my knowledge, we never even had a case of Ebola in our country.
Right.
But people, including one person in my church, was walking around wearing gloves and hazmat type suits.
Well, they did bring some cases in to try to get it in this country, you know, Texas primarily.
There's never a documented case, and then they followed that person that had been exposed to it and followed her on her bicycle. It was just bizarre. But what did come out of it was they developed these vaccines that they used on the people in Africa from that. And then Zika came along the way at one point, and they tried to scare us into thinking our babies are going to be born with golf ball sized heads and things like that. Right. And then there was never a proven case of that. And you know, there were 5,000 cases, I believe, of people that tested positive for Zika virus. And then they had some kind of sketchy, the sketchy way they said it is that there's a possibility that these children born with defects, but they couldn't prove it. It was real sketchy the way they said it. So that was Zika, but then they developed a vaccine to use on the people in the Caribbean. So I watched that happen. I watched that. I look at the big deal, you know, made about SARS and MERS, and they both had high mortality rates. I get that. But in the case of SARS, there were 8 cases documented in the United States. There were 2 cases of MERS documented. So I look at the history of that. And so as soon as this came out, I knew something wasn't right.
That must have been disappointing to start all those fake pandemics and not have them work. You know, I think with Zika, they would have done much better if they had brought in some extra pesticides, too.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It seems like that was what was happening in South America.
Isn't that awful? Yeah. So when it came out, I was fully anticipating, but I was not expecting that they were going to cause a lockdown of the world. I figured I knew they would develop a vaccine and experiment on people with it. But I did not at the time expect this kind of impact. And I gave a talk. This would have been the beginning of February. I gave a talk to my church, which my talk on death certificates was to my church also. And I talked about it, and that was before any of this happened. And, you know, I talked about, you know, the American College of Physicians, of which I'm a fellow and a council member of the American College of Physicians Montana chapter. So I used their information at that time. It was about February 7th, I think. And it was good information. It was saying, you know, this is probably going to be confined to China. You know, don't worry about it. Just don't take any unnecessary travel. They gave instructions on how to wash your hands properly, that kind of thing. So the ACP at that time was right there. Just, you know, take these precautions, do what you should be doing during the flu season anyway, type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then a week before the state directive, the week before our governor, Governor Bullock, you know, ordered the state of emergency and started the shutdown. A week before that, I talked to the infectious disease specialist in our town. We only have one. I talked to him the week before the shutdown, the first one, and he and I were on the same page. You know, I mean, I don't remember, I didn't take the conversation, was basically saying, you know, yeah, we just need to take usual precautions. You know, there's a lot being made out of this. It's not really real. Okay. And then, so that was a week before the first state of emergency was called in Montana. I'm on the health board at Flathead. So a week after the shutdown was started, we had our health board meeting, and that same doctor came in and was spewing out the false narrative. I mean, it was just like, what happened? Something happened here. So that was, I already knew that something was up, but that was really startling because I had had a conversation with him just 2 weeks prior.
Wow. So, wow. Did you ever find out what happened?
With that doctor?
Yeah.
No, I didn't ask him. We don't know each other well enough that he'd be likely to tell me the truth. So, you know, I have my own theories about what happened, but I can't prove it. But I can say this, that he works for the hospital here. And to my knowledge, I'm the only physician in town that doesn't work for the hospital. There might be some others, but I don't know. No, actually, that's not true. There are other independents. There are five or six of them in the whole valley. And I think there's one other one in Kalispell, but almost all the doctors work for the hospital. And then you talk, you know, the incentives that we're finding out that hospitals have for diagnosing COVID-19 in Montana, where I live, in Nebraska and Minnesota, they get $300,000 per patient diagnosed with COVID-19. Wow. So that came out just within the last 10 days or so.
Wow.
So whether that infectious disease doctor had the inside scoop, or whether he was just being told what to do, I have no way of knowing.
So when they diagnose them with that, do they say specifically COVID-19 instead of coronavirus generically?
They get the reimbursement of $300,000 by saying COVID-19.
Now, okay, so if that's the case, my question is there really a test that can tell that? Because right now this thing is mutating, and the only way that you would know the exact strain of the virus is to have something to compare it against.
That's right.
And if they don't have that, is that test valid?
You said it exactly right. Testing, to be legitimate, you have to have a gold standard.
Yeah.
If you have a gold standard of a test, then you can say how many false positives we have and how many false negatives we have.
Exactly. So you're absolutely otherwise, right. You have to make it up.
That's right. And the first batch of test kits from the CDC had to be recalled because it was faulty.
Yeah.
So, but now we believe that the ones that come out are accurate, really. And so there's I believe his first name is Andrew, but it's Dr. Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. He gave a great talk on PCR testing, and I would recommend you take a look at that because he has studied the testing. I haven't spent as much time on that as I have the work on death certificates and that kind of thing, and just trying to keep up with my emails and interviews. But it's an excellent discussion of that. I could send you that link if you don't have it. But he talks about it, and in his talk, he says that it's estimated by at least one source that possibly 80% of the positives are false positives.
Well, but my thought is they might be correct positives if it's just for coronavirus.
Correct. And that's the other issue. And because it took so long to get the test kits out that supposedly work, we got to wonder in Italy, in China, in Seattle, how many of those were just coronavirus Right on. On our respiratory panel, they have five different coronaviruses on our generic respiratory panel. And then there are others like respiratory syncytial virus and influenza, adenovirus, that kind of thing. But there are five different coronaviruses on there. COVID-19 is not one of them. That's a right. special test.
And it so, doesn't yeah, they, mean that there are only five coronaviruses. There's a whole bunch of them, right?
Yeah, I think in the 30s, I believe. It might be more yeah. might be more than that. But there are many, many strains of coronavirus. And yeah. I think that's why the powers that be chose coronavirus. I mean, that's what I believe. Is because there are so many strains and people are going to be confused. It's just a way to muddle the mind.
Yeah.
So that well, when a celebrity stands up and says that they and their wife have coronavirus.
That's what they say. Those are the words they use.
That's right. That's right. That's
and
right.
almost anybody could honestly say that.
Probably. It might be as ubiquitous as toenail fungus, yes.
Yeah.
It very well could be.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Okay, so at some point you started realizing that I guess my question is, you know, when you go through either a PhD or MD programs, generally one of the, so speaking of gold standards for reliability and information is CDC. And you learn that, you know, you can cite that in papers and everything because it's unquestionably true. When did you start realizing that that might not be entirely the case?
When my patient educated me back in 2009, 2010.
About vaccines?
Yeah, about the vaccine industry, which okay. was intimately tied in with the CDC.
All right. So you had already been aware of the situation going on in these agencies for quite a while before this happened.
And the revolving door and all the crony capitalism involved. Absolutely. All the backroom deals.
Gerberding and people like that. Okay, so at the time that this got declared officially as being a pandemic that was a good reason to shut down everybody's livelihood, you already realizing that that was not necessarily what it looked like.
Absolutely. As soon as our governor put out the first state of emergency, I knew that this is such a lie. And they get federal funding for that. And our city of Kalispell, Montana called a state of emergency. They get federal funding for that, and it gives them the excuse to raise taxes.
There's financial incentives that are brilliantly built into all these things.
That's right.
Did you see that the doctor in New York, one of them that was brave enough to be honest about these things, was saying, you know, I hate to mention this, but I think we're killing people with ventilators.
Yes.
And one of the things that's
come out in the last 10 days.
And you could guess that because the mainstream news keeps saying, we need ventilators.
That's right.
No matter what else we do, everybody has to be on a ventilator.
That's right. Yeah. Governor Cuomo, I don't remember what the exact numbers were, but it's like, you've given us 40,000 ventilators. We need 2 million or something.
Exactly. And he forgot to mention the ones he already has, too.
Yeah. So you look at it, the ventilator, that part's turned out to be not true. The models, the models in which they make these predictions are being questioned. Death certificate validity is being questioned. The PCR testing is being questioned. All the financial incentives to lie about the diagnosis. You know, all this is kind of, I hope, enough to wake people up.
Well, I think if I heard right, they get an extra 10 or 20,000 for using a ventilator, even if they only do it for a minute.
That's right. For an admission, now in Montana, we get 300,000, but one of the reports was 13,000 for a COVID-19 admission. It's 12,000 in New York. So I don't know if they were using an average, but Dr. Scott Jensen came out with that. It was 13,000 per admission for COVID-19 and 39,000 per ventilator use. Now, maybe in Montana, we get 500,000 per ventilator use. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, those ventilators must use a lot of electricity, right? They're just really...
Yes, exactly. And now they're finding out it's hurting people more than it helps them.
Yeah. Well, otherwise, they wouldn't want to recommend it, I guess. So
that's why I'm still saying, why aren't people getting this? And that's
because,
you're
because they've been trained since they were born to worship authority.
Yeah.
And you missed that training. You know, you were told to question it.
My parents taught me right. That's right.
Exactly. Well, isn't, you know, when they talk about real science, isn't that partly based on questioning everything?
That's right. Exactly.
including your own current beliefs.
Questioning everything and reproducibility. I was interviewed about vaccines, because when I got on the health board here, when I was appointed to the health board, people were up in arms because they knew how much I question the vaccine industry. And so an interviewer from the newspaper came, and she botched intentionally the article. But one of the things that she and I talked about was hypotheses, like herd immunity that they use it's used to mandate everybody. That's just somebody's idea. It does not reach the level of a scientific hypothesis, even, let alone the theory.
So the translation is that it's made up, basically. and they also like to call you herds of animals, too.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, they do. Yeah, that's right. So that's one of the things I told about her. It wasn't in the article, though, but that's a really important thing for people to understand. And there's one professor out of Germany, or at least his training was in Germany. He says the way we develop herd immunity is to be exposed to these viruses. That's how we develop. So he's very against this concept of flattening the curve. He says, let people get exposed to it. They'll develop immunity to it. And that's how we really make this thing go away.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's why kids growing up in a sterile environment don't do as well.
That's right. And sitting in our homes without fresh air and sunshine.
Yeah, exactly. That's why the health authorities say the sun is going to kill you.
Yeah.
As I've said before, I really trust, you can trust the guidance of those authorities as long as you remember to translate by reversing whatever it is.
Yeah, right. That's good. I like that.
So because so many people do, just without thinking, believe in this concept of herd immunity now, I think there's millions that think, well, of course, I've heard it a million times. It has to be true.
That's right.
You want to take a minute and say what the fallacy is based on and why it is not accurate? So people I don't mean to have a major diversion, but you mentioned it, and it reminded me. It's such an important concept because... And we'll do another show on the immunization and vaccine idea and stuff. But in general, one of the reasons people are incentivized to turn in their neighbors like not wearing a mask or not getting a shot or something is because even if they are doing it, somehow herd immunity makes it not work if somebody else doesn't do it.
Ish.
Right.
Yeah, and then there's the human beings and doing what they do. They did it in Nazi Germany. They did it in Stalin's, Russia is people turn each other in. People would even turn in their parents or their children. So there's something wrong with our species there. So
common sense got removed.
And one of the things, before I answer your question, and if you could answer it maybe specifically in smaller parts, because that's a big question that you asked.
I know, sorry about that.
But, that lie from the Nazi propagandist Goebbels, who said, the bigger the lie and the more often you tell it, the more likely people are to believe it. And so that's why to think that this is based on a lie and the whole world is shut down. Because I get that argument a lot from people that say, how could this not be true? It's shut down the whole world.
Right, yeah.
People say things like
that. And all these people that they think are diverse entities are agreeing, so it must be right. And they don't realize that they're all in collusion.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, so our Governor Bullock, either he or one of his henchmen talked to the administrator of our hospital, or maybe they were all in a meeting together. And then the administrator of our hospital set out what the doctors are supposed to do, what they're supposed to say, what they can and cannot say. And because of the way medicine, the provision of medical care has developed in our country, most doctors are not independent. They don't, they're in groupthink. If they think to themselves and state it out loud, they could lose their jobs. So it's been a very stealthy, long haul destruction of the medical profession.
Very sophisticated. You know what? The lesson that it's taught them is don't investigate anything too clearly, because if you do, it's going to contradict everything that you're supposed to be doing.
That's right.
And I think that's why most doctors don't even know what they're injecting into people.
Ish.
Even if they see some of them die, it's like acceptable in the standards.
Well, for the first 20 years of my profession, I gave flu shots. We used to give them in my clinic.
Yeah, so you've watched it in yourself.
Yeah.
It's powerful programming.
It is very powerful programming. And the other thing about physicians is they don't have time maybe to do research on every little thing. So they're happy to get something from the CDC that says vaccines are safe. Vaccines are safe.
Well,
so
they're, it makes it much easier.
They don't have to look into it. And I think if my patient hadn't come to me, if I had just heard it from somebody on the radio or something, if she hadn't come to me with these inches of paper and show me and put it in my face and talked about that and made it very personal, you know, maybe I wouldn't have gotten it at that time. I think I would have eventually gotten it, but she I got it within minutes because of who she is and what she showed me.
Do you think it, because, you know, I didn't want to throw us off too much diverted by the question on herd immunity. I tend to want everybody to just know everything right away.
Me too. I'm the same way.
We have two choices on herd immunity. Either you could say, you know, somewhat abbreviated version and then a bigger version when we do the other show. Or if you'd rather not get into it and wait and... What do you think's better?
Maybe wait and do it on the show.
I mean, that's fine.
On another show, because it's the concept is that everybody needs to get vaccinated so that everybody's safe. So that if they're around somebody who is immune compromised, they won't give it to that person who's immune compromised. So if the whole herd is immunized against this terrible virus or bacteria, what it is, if everybody's immune to it, then those people that maybe can't get out to get the shots or for whatever reason they can't have them, they're safe. You know, if they're too immune compromised to get the vaccine, like some of the live vaccines, then if the rest of us have all gotten it, that person is safe.
Yeah, so, and that's, of course, all predicated on the assumption that there's a correlation between antibody presence and real life immunity. I think if that correlation were ever debunked, it would be the end of the whole industry.
There you go. Do it.
We can get into that later.
Well, that's all.
So what brought you to the death certificate issue?
Well, okay, so you know that I'm already getting that something is not going on here. Not right here. Something is not adding up. And then being a doctor who's filled out death certificates for 30 years, like I talk about in my video, I know how much power and how much leeway is given to doctors. So I know that experientially. I don't think most people realize that because they think that the data that goes into these data banks or they see statistics, how many died of this, how many died of that. They just assume that's based on some scientific fact.
Empirical
and it's just
truth.
One of those things that is just, it's just not known unless you're one that fills out death certificates. You don't know that. So my knowledge of the leeway and power that doctors are given and how unbelievably easy it is to fudge that. So that got my attention. And I think before COVID-19, there was probably some unscrupulous activity. For an example, I could think of is if a person died from suicide and they had a big, you know, life insurance policy, you know, that doesn't go to their family if they killed themselves. So that would be a reason why maybe a doctor would fudge for the sake of the family. So those kinds of things maybe happen, or somebody's life, you know, life insurance or health insurance or something like that. There could be reasons why even before COVID-19 that things were falsified. But I think for the most part, I hope at least most doctors were filling it out honestly to the best of their knowledge.
Right. Okay. But something brought it specifically to your attention in the midst of this situation. So do you remember when that happened?
Oh, probably I started thinking about it probably as soon as I saw the change in that doctor's attitude.
Okay.
That was a piece. And then the other thing that was quite startling to me, I mean, now in retrospect that I'm hearing about all the financial incentives, it shouldn't have surprised me. Okay. Yeah. But when Anthony Fauci, you know, who's one of the biggest fearmongers out there, because he was doing his fearmongering. And then at the end of March, I think it was March 26th or 27th, he co-authored an opinion in the New England Journal that came out and said that, you know, this is not as dangerous as we thought. It's looking like the mortality is probably more like the flu. It might even be less. He gave a range, you know, a very, very low percent mortality. And so I took that, and that article came out on the same day that our governor put out the state, that it's a state of emergency. So I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. And I said, you know, our governor just didn't get the memo. You know, he just didn't know. And I'm in leadership on the ACP, pretty high level of leadership, and I'm in some leadership capacity of the Montana Medical Association. So I sent out an email to the leadership of all the physicians, and I said, look, this came out just today from Anthony Fauci. I said, Governor Bullock doesn't know about this. All we need to do.
Good news.
Isn't this great news? All we need to do is educate them, and we can turn this down. We can turn this around. We can get this lockdown stopped right now.
Yeah, he's going to be so happy to hear about this.
And out of all the doctors in leadership, I don't know how many got the email, but it was probably 70, 80, could have been 90. These doctors came after me. I mean, they were vicious. The ones from the ACP were not. Now, those are people that I know fairly well. We're there's only 12 of us on that panel. We know each other well, and they very respectfully disagreed with me. But the other ones, they were anything but respectful. And I had one doctor who I'm not going to say valiantly, because he wasn't protecting me. He was protecting the truth.
Yeah.
So I had one that came out. He backed me up in terms of saying he agreed with me, and then he made his arguments very, very well. These were so rational, so reasonable, so logical, and then they excoriated him. So that's another eye opener. So I could say, as up to March 26th or 27th, whenever it was that I sent that email to the doctors, thinking we were going to be able to fix the situation.
So that was kind of the feedback of confirming what you suspected.
Well, I didn't know the doctors were in on it, to be honest with you. I thought, the doctors that work for my hospital here, okay, I get that. But I didn't think it was widespread that doctors are in on that. I'm showing probably I'm an optimistic person, but yeah, I'm just a really optimistic person. And when I was 16 years old, I started my own political party. It was called the Happy People's Party. Okay.
Wow.
So from the time I was a teenager.
Is it too late to join at this point?
I had three members, you'd be happy to know.
Okay.
And so I've always, it's because of my parents, the way that they are, I think, and they were always standing up for the little guy. They were very involved with, the human rights, and all that back in the 60s. And so So I've just always been oriented to wanting to make the world a better place. And so I've just always felt like I'm going to be able to actually do something. And so when an opportunity comes up to actually try to help a situation, if I believe I can, I jump right in there. And this was one of those cases where it was a shock to me. I really thought, I was optimistic, the doctors can do it. I just would not have thought the doctors would go in on it like that, like they did, would go in on the false narrative. And they didn't just respectfully, agree to disagree like the ACP doctors. They were vicious.
It's personal and emotional, right? And
yes, and nonsensical.
And it makes you wonder what's behind that. Because if you're a positive type person like you described, it's part of that is assuming that most people are just basically or motivated the same way. And if they knew something true, they would acknowledge it.
Yeah, and I'm old enough to know that isn't so. But I still wanna believe, and I think now that capacity is shattered, but I still, at that time, so March 26th of this year, I still believed these are doctors. These are doctors that they're trained in science and math. They're trained about statistical analysis.
Right.
Up until that day, I thought, give them the facts and they'll get it.
Yeah.
And so I've had to adjust my thinking. And, you can maybe figure out why it took me so long.
That's hard to adjust your thinking on that, because we tend to think that the degree of education that somebody's had makes them wiser. And
it's
really not an exact correlation to say.
Yeah, especially science and math and statistical analysis and first do no harm and all those things that were taught.
Right.
I mean, so... And I know how I can understand, in retrospect, thinking about this, how it happened, because what I talked about, most doctors work for the hospitals, I get that. And then later we find out about all the financial incentives. And so I don't know what went on behind the scenes or how they came up with this. So I don't know. I don't know how that works, because they don't let me in on that level.
Yeah, yeah. So. You're probably not going to be asked to join the club at this point. Which is good.
Yes, it's very good. And I told them they'll have to fire me because I won't quit. So I said that to the health, one of the ones that appointed me on the health department. I said, you know what, you can fire me. It's an unpaid job, and we're basically just there to rubber stamp whatever the health officer wants to do. So I said, fire me.
But the whole public health.
Oh my word.
You know, industry in this country is really interesting, and you can see it developing in their academic training, because they play on their desire to be an authority, you know, and to know better than everybody and to tell people what to do, and they don't pay attention to the fact that it's just based on what they memorized.
Yeah, and we had a health board meeting today, and it's open to the public, so I'm not sharing anything that isn't publicly available. But I like the people on the board. It was very friendly, very cordial. But at one point they mentioned that our local department here, a little small town of Kalispell, they got $120,000 from the federal government, and they got another amount, I don't remember what, from FEMA.
Wow.
And that just made everybody feel really wonderful.
Yeah, that means
except
you're
for me. Yeah.
You're so they're advanced. Talking.
Isn't that something? So they're getting. So it's just like they're getting the money. That's what they want, the money. They want the power. They want to be able to build their departments. They want to make government bigger and bigger. They want to destroy the private sector so that everyone's dependent on the government. And they're doing a really good job doing that. Destroying.
So there's this psychological mechanism that's active in most people that don't question it. And it says the more powerful you can show yourself by dominating and controlling other people, it somehow raises your status.
Goodness gracious.
And it's really exciting. Yeah.
Makes them feel very special.
Plus, you get well paid for it, too.
Yeah. Yeah. They get well
paid. And the mainstream news will interview you.
Yeah. And they won't butcher it. They'll,
No, they'll ask you to stay longer. Okay, so, what did you find out about these death certificates that you started wondering about?
Okay, so I looked at the CDC website to see how they were, just to get an idea of how they were, because I know there's instructions on CDC how to fill out death certificates, because I looked at that, you know, many, many years ago. And so there have always been instructions available, and I have not had somewhere 550 to 600 patients. I haven't had a single one diagnosed COVID-19 positive. I had one go in the hospital quite sick, but she was COVID negative. So, what was your question again?
Well, what did you notice about the death certificates that started you getting so much?
Okay, so I looked on the CDC website to see what they were saying about it and see if they were giving instructions to the doctors about how to fill it out. And I got from that CDC website all the information I needed to clarify how this was happening. And I read some of it on my video. Would you like me to read some of that?
Yeah.
Would this be a good time to do that?
It would be great, yeah.
Okay,
because we're assuming that people didn't see that video.
Okay, all right. So I'm going to give you two different data points here. One is it's the March 24th, 2020 National Vital Statistics System memo, and it states, and this is a quote. It says the rules for coding and selection of the underlying cause of death are expected to result in COVID-19. Being the underlying cause more often than not, end of quote. So they're not saying we've collected this data and it's happening this much. They're saying we expect it to be the cause of death more often than not. I mean, that's quite laden with meaning.
Would you read that sentence again? I think that's really important.
Doesn't it boggle the mind?
Yeah.
So it's the March 24th, 2020 National Vital Statistics System Memo, and it's on the CDC's COVID-19 tally is what they call it on the CDC. Quote, the rules for coding and selection of the underlying cause of death are expected to result in COVID-19 being the underlying cause more often than not. Wow. End of quote.
Wow.
Isn't that something? So it's not this many cases we've had or this is what, you know, we think is going to happen, saying we expect.
It means this is what we want you to determine is true.
Yes. And it makes doctors feel very comfortable. See, that gives them a level of comfort. We're expecting it. Okay, we're meeting the expectations of the CDC. We're good. We're and good doctors. We're meeting their expectation.
It sounds very scientific and authoritative.
Yes, very reproducible. Yes. Yes, I think the scientific method requires reproduction. So if they do this and then the other stuff I'm going to read follows, then it's reproducible. Our hypothesis.
Well, that proves it's true.
Our hypothesis had this expectation, and then it happened, so it must be true.
Yeah, we were so smart to foresee that. It was incredible.
That's the definition of science right there. Yeah. All right, so that was really bad. And I don't think I emphasized that enough when I gave my talk. I should have paused and let people absorb that.
Yeah.
And then on the same, that was not the CDC COVID-19 tally. It was the National Biostatistics System memo. And then on the CDC's COVID-19 tally from April 4th, which was the day before I gave my talk, it says, this is not a quote right here, but it says, the CDC report of cases in the U.S. April 4th, 2020, states the death numbers are preliminary and have not been confirmed, end of quote. So the numbers are, quote, preliminary and have not been confirmed, end of quote. So the CDC is saying, you know, this death toll of, you know, 2,000 a day in New York, or whatever they were saying at that particular time, it's preliminary. Yeah. They're giving us cause of death numbers, and it's preliminary, and they're calling it confirmed. There's something wrong here.
Yeah, I mean, I'd want to say, you know, what's that middle part about preliminary? What does that mean?
Yes, and I think the preliminary is answered in the next one. Okay. Because this is the one that I think is, I mean, these are all laden with meaning, but this is the one that I think is, they're all amazing.
Yeah.
But these are government entities here. So Stephen Schwartz, PhD, National Director of the Division of Vital Statistics, says, in answer to the question, there was a question on the COVID-19 alert, and here's the question. Quote, should COVID-19... be reported on the death certificate only with a confirmed case? Now, you would think the answer to that is yes, right? That of course,
obviously, because otherwise you'd have to honestly say, I don't know what the cause is.
That's right. So that's the question he was asked. And an honest person would answer like you did. So here's the question. Should COVID-19 be reported on the death certificate only with a confirmed test? That's the question. Good question, right?
Yeah, the translation of that is, should I write down COVID-19 as the cause of death only if I know COVID-19 was the cause of death?
Yeah, there you go. And here's his answer. I'm sorry to disappoint you. It won't surprise you. But so here's his answer. Stephen Schwartz, PhD, National Director of the Division of Vital Statistics. He says, quote, COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate for all decedents where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. Certifiers should include as much detail as possible based on their knowledge of the case, medical records, laboratory testing, etc. End of quote. So he's saying that it should be reported even if we assume. He used the word assume. And right. You should make, you know, and like my talk, you know, I led out talking about death certificate filling out in general before COVID-19 and talked about how many assumptions we make, right? So he's saying, put it on any of those death certificates if you assume it caused or contributed to death. So that, if somebody tests...
That's very efficient. It saves a lot of time if you can do it by assuming everything.
And that, you know, you just have to put too much thought into it, and you'd have to humbly, you know, accept that you really don't know. So it saves time. It, you know, it doesn't hurt your feelings, allows you to maintain a certain level of pride. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and then, so they're basically saying they're encouraging these doctors to give it your best guesswork.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say in their words. They're encouraging it, you know. Give it your best guess is what that, when they say,
right.
Based on your knowledge of the case, the medical record and the labs, make your best guess. But the key thing is all decedents where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. So if somebody has, you know, and I talk a lot in my death certificate, I talk about dying from versus dying with. And so if you are tested for COVID-19 and you test positive and you die of pneumococcal pneumonia, and they've got the pneumococcus grew in the sputum, it grew in the blood, you know, it's on the chest x-ray that you had a pneumonia, it's pretty clear that person died from pneumococcal pneumonia. But if they happen to have tested positive for COVID-19, that's considered the cause of death.
Exactly.
Because even if they put it on the second or third line, it's still going to be entered into the data bank as a COVID-19 death, because that COVID-19 is there.
And that's in addition to the question of whether it's even possible to test for COVID-19.
That's right. Yeah, even giving them the benefit of the doubt, which I don't think the testing is accurate, but if let's just pretend that it is.
If they could, yeah.
If they... I like the way you word things.
I'm not trying to be
you're just
disrespectful, but I tend to be kind of irreverent, because like you, I finally realized that the fancy words don't change what something really is.
That's right. Yeah, I don't take it as being irreverent. You know, maybe a little bit of a smart aleck. I like that.
I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, I don't think anything was irreverent or disrespectful. But that's shocking, that the language that they used on their own websites, and I made a physical copy and I had attachments made and sent them to various people, because within the week after I gave my talk, but obviously other doctors were already thinking about this, because it just really, like Scott Jensen in Minnesota, that state senator from Minnesota, he came out, he was on a couple different news broadcasting. One was Fox. I don't remember what the other one was. And he talked about it too, about the death certificates, you know, not being accurate.
Yeah.
And then other people have come out about it. So it's really that concept has exploded. And death certificates, that's what we base our mortality data on. So they're scaring the living daylights out of people. They're shutting down the whole world based on.
And even with that, even with the at least highly questionable death statistics, they're having to admit they're going down, right? For the so-called COVID-19 diagnosis.
Yeah.
And they're going down at the same time as the restrictions on your life are going up, which I think is a really interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, but they're taking credit for it. They're saying it's because we locked down the world. That's why the numbers are going down.
Okay.
So that's the grand poobah of the false narrative.
So it's going to be even better if you have more restrictions.
That's right. And they'll just pull it out of their hat. You know, 3 months from now, if there's too much social unrest or people are figuring it out, they'll just pull it out of their hat. Oh no, now it's COVID-20. Now we've got COVID-20. It's probably the same as COVID-19. We're using the same test kits, but it's back and it's going to kill everybody. So that's the false narrative that's just going to keep on giving. They're just going to keep on pulling it out.
Yeah, they've got plenty of viruses. So what they're establishing in a way is how you're supposed to react when there's a virus announced.
It's a psyop. Yeah. What was it, that 201, event 201?
Right before the...
Yeah, that was back in October, I believe, and they talked about using coronavirus.
Amazing coincidence.
Yes.
There were some other coincidences, too. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, the Reverend Fauci, and he was in a 2017 video saying, oh, by the way, there's going to be a surprise outbreak during Trump's administration.
Yeah. He's a prophet. He's a prophet.
Yes. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had this plan. It's a psyop. It was a psyop from the start. They don't even have to have a real virus. Just tell us a scary story and you know, make everything more exaggerated, and let's just see if people fall for it. See if people are so gullible that they'll fall for this. And it worked. It worked beautifully.
Now
it worked across the world.
Yeah, in almost every country.
Yeah.
So that basically, this comes down to a question of consciousness, I guess, because if the public is aware enough, even if they had basic common sense, they wouldn't be that gullible.
That's right.
But right now, that's not the case. I mean, you have to give a lot of credit to the educational system for the current state.
Give credit where credit is due. That's right.
The media has done a lot of work on this, too.
Hey, boy, have they ever.
In fact, entertainment as well. Because I remember the movie Outbreak, right, with Dustin Hoffman. Vaccine saved the world, in case you didn't remember.
I saw Contagion. We watched Contagion. It was the same kind of propaganda film for vaccines. The vaccines ended up saving the world.
Yeah. So, and in Outbreak, and maybe in Contagion, they had these meetings between these totally selfless public servants in high offices in the medical system, which is representative. And they were saying, you know, we really hate to sacrifice constitutional rights, but if we don't, you're all going to die.
Yes, exactly. You
know, everybody would support that, which unfortunately they are almost.
It's crazy. Yeah, they did the same thing. You know, the CDC was given a lot of credit in the movie Contagion. You know, there was a good guy at the top and a woman working for it. She's the one that discovered the vaccine and showed that it worked and all that.
Yeah.
Sometimes
they forget to mention that the vaccine was patented 4 years ago.
Ish. Yeah.
Because they're not trying to get it. I mean, I don't want to try to do our vaccine show now, but this is all based on the idea that the vaccines prevented diseases. And if you look at the history back 200 years, there are serious questions about that. I mean, that's
serious
pretty
questions. Unlikely. That's right.
So now, with the idea that, well, the death certificates are not,
questionable at best.
Yeah, questionable if you want to be really polite about it. Then that makes it look like there's more deaths from it. That means you should be more afraid.
That's right.
And be more obedient and more of the opinion, of course we want to give up our rights, because how else are we going to survive?
Yes.
Be safe and healthy.
Yes, thank you, government, for taking such good care of us. I so appreciate that. People are asking for it. They want to be protected by the government.
Yes.
They want it.
They're starting to get really suspicious of anybody that doesn't think like that.
Yeah, and people getting stopped by police, and they're in a car by themselves, and they get stopped by the police because they're not showing proper social distancing, and they're in the car by themselves. This is crazy.
But I guess the light at the end of their tunnel is that Fauci says, if you take all the vaccines and the tracking devices injected into your skin and everything, you might get to come out sometimes.
There you go. And there's apps on phones that you could track other people that have had COVID-19.
Fortunately, China has saved us the research on that.
That just makes me feel so much more safe.
I know.
We can line up and get antibody tested and then carry a little card that says we're safe.
Exactly.
I mean, he just makes me feel so good.
And they've had instances of test kits that were not just inaccurate, but that were
infected,
tainted with the virus, or the worst part, they had it possible.
But it's so bizarre, and people are still buying it.
It's like, it's not like believable enough for a good sci-fi movie. But it's the one we're in.
But I still say, the popularity of my video, I mean, going 1.5 million views, and that's just the ones we know how to measure on our three or four sites. That tells me that people know in their gut, a lot of people, maybe it's not the majority, but a lot of people know inside that something's not right about this story. Something is not adding up. You know, people of all different political persuasions, different faiths, they know at some level this is not right.
What platforms is that video on now that they can see?
It should still be on my... I'm not very good at technology.
No, that's okay. I was just curious. I mean, did they let it on the major platforms like YouTube and stuff like that?
It's on YouTube. It's on YouTube. It's on my pastor's YouTube. I know that for sure. And so it'll be Pastor Chuck Baldwin or Liberty Fellowship.
Those are the channels, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Maybe I can get back to you later with the
Yeah, that's fine. We can put out a note for that. But what's really nice, you mentioned Chuck's channel. You've got a pastor that will actually talk about the real physical level world.
That's right.
I think
every Sunday. He's fabulous.
Yeah. I've watched him for many years.
Oh, great.
Florida. Really, I like people with that kind of level of courage and ethics.
Yeah. He is courageous truth teller. doesn't care who he upsets or whose feelings he hurts. He tells it like it is. You know.
Have you heard about the? I think I'm not sure if it was Harvard or some other research department that came up with the new injectable dye that saturates your body, and you can't see it except with a reader, and it tells your whole vaccine status.
And oh my goodness.
Whether you're immune and allowed to maybe even fly on an airplane or something like that.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
You can't have it surgically removed because it just saturates you.
Oh, how awful. Yeah, they're always trying to figure out something, you know, some conniving against, you know, trying to destroy our freedom. So,
yeah, for your convenience.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's based on the idea that, too, that they want people to believe that by declaring an emergency, of course, by the proper authorities, your rights disappear until they undeclare it.
My goodness.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And fortunately, there are protests going around all over the world. In Berlin, there was a big protest. Somewhere in Sweden, I know in Ohio, Michigan. In Michigan, they have, I believe it's over 150,000 signatures on a petition to recall their governor.
Yeah, and said that garden seeds are not essential, so you can't buy those. To help fight the virus, of course.
And we have plans in Montana, in our capital, Helena, this Sunday. There's going to be a demonstration, and I don't like to miss church with pastors, or miss his service. So we're going to probably have our own little one here in the Flathead. So hopefully across the nation, there are protests.
Yeah, I know there's one on Saturday in Austin, and doing it in a lot of different places.
Okay, great. Yeah, so that's what it takes. People have got to stand up.
Yeah.
And take a risk of being shot or arrested, you know, all those
yeah.
kinds of.
Well, it helped them in Virginia, right, with the gun control stuff.
Correct. Yeah, right. They still signed it. The governor still signed it into law, I believe.
Which part? Because they had a whole bunch of different bills.
Okay, and I'm not sure of the specifics. So
yeah,
I don't know
some of the stuff they were planning they didn't do, but it had to get to the point where people were talking about secession, county by county, and a lot of the sheriffs in Virginia. We're aware that the sheriff is the highest law enforcement officer, right? We've had Richard Mack on a lot talking about that.
Right.
Yeah, it was neat.
So, yeah, they have a constitutional sheriff in Bonners County in Idaho who sent a letter to the governor about it, and it was very well done. And the ones that attacked him were the doctors that came after that sheriff. One of them publicly broadcast that if that sheriff gets sick with COVID-19, they're not going to put him on a ventilator. I mean, these people are nasty.
They're really nasty.
They're nasty. And one of the doctors from Idaho called me on Monday, and I didn't talk to her, but my office manager did. And she said she was going to report me to my licensing board. So they got problems in Idaho that I was not aware of. Makes my medical association sound pretty good.
They've got a few freedom-oriented representatives in Idaho. Yeah.
Good.
Which has been on the show before.
Oh, fantastic.
But they have to be a really strong minority because most of their colleagues try to attack them personally all the time.
Yeah, you have to be really strong. You have to be, and that's why, again, I thank my parents for my upbringing. Peer pressure doesn't do anything. I mean, if I stood alone, I didn't have any support, I'd still say the same things.
Because you know you're not alone.
It sure is nice to have support, though. You know, Pastor Baldwin, you know, other people. So I don't feel alone. But I'm just saying, if I was alone, I'd still say the same things.
Yeah.
So,
well,
a lot of people, they just can't handle that. They cannot handle it. People.
No, it changes them right away.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad.
So we need kind of a resurgence of a different character and attitude.
That's
right. Around the world, really.
That's right. And I believe the love of liberty is deep inside us. I believe God put it there. And so I'm just hoping that thing that God put in us to love liberty will somehow people will be able to reach inside and pull that up and make it, put it in the forefront. And I don't know how that happens, but I think you've done some work in that area of the mind that maybe you know how to do. I don't.
Yeah, there are ways to do it.
Telling people the truth doesn't seem to make any difference.
No, because it's the psychological programming that determines if they hear you or not.
There you go. Yeah, I'd like to learn more about that.
You're invited, because if you can take it and use it, that's
great. I would like that.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, we'll invite everybody. So How's the balance of work for you now between the demands of the practice and trying to, you know, continue to respond to all the comments you're getting from the video and all the involvement that you'd like to have in protecting freedom?
Well, I'm very fortunate that I don't have a very busy patient practice right now. You know, okay, some people are just, I guess, at home, not wanting to step out of their home. I'm not sure why, but it's very, very slow right now. So I've been able to focus more time on this issue of speaking the truth, because all the emails that I get, you know, and interview requests and Messenger on my face and keeping my own, you know, Facebook post and trying to keep track of pastors, there aren't enough hours of the day, and I have to get some sleep at some
point. It's really important. Your message is going to change if you don't have any sleep.
Yes, it will be very hard to express myself. So I feel very fortunate. It's very, from a patient standpoint, and when it's slow in terms of patients coming in, that means my patients are healthy, right? They don't.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to count as success.
So that's the way that I look at it. You know, is that if patients aren't coming in, it means they're healthy. So I'm so happy to be able to devote this much time to this, is the project of telling the truth and spreading the truth.
Yeah, it's incredible. So if, you know, since we're wrapping up this part here, what do you want to let people know about how to stay in touch with your communications as they develop? How do they follow what you're saying and doing?
Probably the best way would be on Facebook.
Okay. Just under your name?
Just under my name. And since I won't know that they came from your program, I'll just, in the next couple of days, I'll just confirm everybody's friendship. How about that?
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that would be great. Cause that would probably be the best. Cause I do things a little differently than most people on Facebook. I put up one post a day, and then I ask people to share comments. So I just have one message of the day, and then just load it up. And it doesn't have to be directly related to the topic.
Okay.
Just if you got something on your mind, something that's important, a bit of news or a meme or, you know, anything that you think is important and you want to get out there and you want a pretty big audience, just put it on there as a comment. That's how I do it.
If people are just now meeting you, how exactly is the Facebook page titled?
They should be able to just put in Annie Bukacek.
Okay, you don't say doctor before, just Annie Bukacek.
No, just Annie, A-N-N-I-E.
Yeah.
And then B-U-K-A-C-E-K.
Got it. Okay. And we'll keep mentioning that to people too.
And if that doesn't work, the other thing that they can do is they can call my office, and they can, because a lot of people have been doing that. I'm including the ones that threatened me, but mostly, for the most part, it's been good phone calls. But that my office manager takes their name and then emails me their name and their contact information. There's also a way, I think it's through my website, I believe. It's Hosanna Healthcare. And I think they can get on there and they can message me. I wish I knew a little bit more exactly how to do that. I've never tried to message myself, but on Hosanna Healthcare website, there should be a way that they could get on there and they could send me a direct message so they don't have to go through my office manager.
If I remember right, there's a contact form on your website, right?
That's how you got a hold of me, right?
Yeah, that's what I did originally.
Yeah, so that would probably be the best, rather than depending on somebody to pass on the information that could get passed.
Correct. Okay, and why don't you spell it for people, the name of the practice?
It's Hosanna, H-O-S-A-N-N-A.
Uh-huh.
Second word health, third word care. So Hosanna Healthcare.
Okay.
And I would love to hear from your people.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to call you and see how they can be mutually supportive. And
this would be great.
Do anything that multiplies your efforts in a lot of places.
Yeah, and that might even be, I mean, I don't know how much of a volume I could handle, but that would be better in a way than getting on my, just making a friend request, because then I would know that they knew you, and I can make note of that, and I'll know.
Well, and wherever they come from is, of course, fine, but.
Right, I used to be very, very particular about who I'll friend. You know, it used to have to be I'd recognize who the mutual friends are and that kind of thing. But anymore, after my video went so broadly, I'm just confirming everybody, because I don't know. And nobody can hurt me by being on
No, air. And on the contact form on the website, you're going to know by what they say what they're offering or suggesting to do.
Correct. Like. If they go through the Hosanna Healthcare and they fill out that form like you do, then they could tell me a little bit about themselves. They could tell me where they're from, give me their phone number, all of that. And that would be a lot more meaningful to me.
Yeah, I would suggest that people do that.
That would be ideal, because then I'll also know their level of understanding about things.
Exactly.
So yeah. that would be fantastic. I would like that.
Well, hopefully you're going to be open to sequels on this.
And oh, I would love to. You're fun. You're so smart. I like the way you run your show. So I would love to be back on. I love to laugh. So.
Yeah, exactly. I think it helps with survival through things like this.
It does. I think that's one of my survival mechanisms, because everything is so ridiculous that when somebody comes up with some new bizarre story, I just got to laugh about it. I mean, it's tragic. It's horrible. Don't think I get that.
Yeah,
but it's so bizarre. It makes me laugh.
Yeah, they could try, but I at the moment they haven't outlawed humor. And they can't do anything. They can't really do anything to require fear.
Well, you must not have ever seen the cartoon Captain Underpants.
No, I missed that one.
Captain Underpants, because the evil guy on the show, he didn't like the fact that these two little kids were laughing all the time, and so he came up with a way to shrink the part of your brain that makes you laugh.
Okay. Wow, that's terrible. Did he get stopped?
Good guys won.
Was Captain Underpants a good guy or a bad guy?
Well, two little kids, he was the principal of the school. And with the magic ring that they got in.
Because I wanted to fill in this gap in my understanding of.
You got to see the movie. I'll butcher it. But these little kids, they got a ring and a box of cereal.
Yeah.
And they used the ring to transform their principal into Captain Underpants.
So, I see. So did he become like a superhero?
Yes.
Wow.
You got to see it. I can't do it justice.
Yeah, I actually think some of the superhero movies are inspiring.
Yeah.
Because you can translate that into your particular situation.
But the horrifying part of it is that this guy was actually trying to shrink the part of the brain that makes you laugh. That'll make you sad if you see that.
Yeah, I think that they would love to do that in so-called real life.
They would, because it actually, laughter is good medicine. There's something physiologic that happens when you laugh, just like there's something physiologic that happens when you're thankful. I get up every morning, no matter how I feel, I always thank God. I'm thankful. I thank him. And if I'm having a hard time thanking him, I just think about all the things I'm thankful. There's something physiologic when you laugh. There's something physiologic when you cry. Physiologic when you give thanks. Physiologic when you're fearful. That's why I can't wait to hear what you have to say at another point.
I hope you'll join us. But did you ever hear of Dr. Emoto's water experiments? In Japan, I guess.
No.
He was saying there's consciousness in everything, which I actually agree with after a lot of investigation of that. But he put glasses of water on a table in front of the lab technicians, three of them. And one of the technicians was supposed to be thinking toward the glass of water, I love you, over and over again. Another one was, I hate you. And another one was, ignoring. And then they'd flash freeze the water and examine the crystals under a microscope. And the H2O doesn't change, but the way the individual H2O molecules agglomerate and coordinate with each other changes completely. Wow. And it changes the visible pattern in the ice crystals.
Wow.
And the ones that made the most beautiful frozen patterns, totally different and incredible to look at, like artwork, were love and gratitude.
Wow.
It opens up whole dimensions of stuff.
Wow, that's neat.
The physical world isn't just...
We love somebody or we're thankful what that does to ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, look, even if you're only thinking about the water, that's the main element in your body.
Wow.
So that...
Wow, that's a lot. Wow, okay.
Yeah, I mean, people used to give thanks for their food all the time and say grace, but not just by a bunch of words. You're supposed to actually feel something. And that could be changing the molecular structure of the food.
Yeah, I got to get that name. Hold on. So what's that investigator's name?
I think it's a Dr. Imoto, maybe Imoto.
Okay.
If that doesn't work, tell me and I'll get you the right spelling, but I think that's it. And okay. It's the water movie, if it's still available. And if not, I'll help you find it.
Okay, fantastic. All right.
So, I can let you guys know what it is. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah, I worked on the DVD, so I know. It's Masamaro Emoto, E-M-O-T-O.
E-M-O-T-O. Okay,
yep. And
what's the first name?
It's Dr. Masamaro, M-A-S-S-A-U-R-O, I think. He's Japanese. And it's called Messages in Water.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, perfect. So just for the last little bit, because we're still on the ending up the show here. I like to make it informal, so it's fine. And let's leave that part on with Doug coming in, because that just makes it more real. But I guess the bottom line, what do you think the message of this experience is for people to carry with them out of this conversation?
Oh, boy. Because your listeners are already awake, right? They already know.
Yeah, I mean, we get new ones all the time, but the core group is pretty aware.
I don't know how I would encapsulate that. We've got to stick together. We've got to, stand up for truth, and people need to understand that it doesn't have to be a majority.
Yeah, that's so
crazy. Feisty minority, but we got to stick together and love each other and back each other up.
Exactly. So
they'll pick us off one at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Hang together or hang separately, as Franklin or somebody said. My message is support Dr. Annie Bukacek's work any way you possibly can. Stay in touch. And, even in our thoughts, we have a huge effect on each other.
I agree. I'm looking forward to getting your contacts. That sounds fun. Oh, you're so much fun. This was a great show.
Well,
I really appreciate it. Glad we got our technology to catch up with you.
Our privilege to have you on. So hold on, and we'll say goodbye in the break here.
Okay.
Okay, there goes Dr. Annie Bukacek. You guys, I hope you enjoyed that. Personally, I get just stunned and encouraged when I run into somebody who's like really coming from a different place than most of us hypnotized zombies down here. And it's very encouraging, especially somebody with credentials who, as I mentioned, has survived medical training or academic training with their common sense intact, which that takes incredible character to do that. They didn't design those programs of learning by mistake. I mean, they're intense cult training in many ways, and the people who get through that and are still able to contact their brilliance are, they're very valuable, and they can do a lot of good in the world. So I do encourage people to follow Annie, both in her Facebook page, as she said, and Hosanna Healthcare website too, where as she says, they have a contact form, and that's a place to get in touch with her if you want to identify yourself as an ally and just let her know that you're in support. That would be great. And we'll have future episodes with her too, I think, on other subjects. I can see several that would be really interesting and valuable to talk about, so we'll work on setting that up. And see, what else do I want to tell you? Well, in case you're a new listener, since this is a Sunday show, I want to tell you about Saturday shows. And the main one is called Lost Arts Radio Live. It's at Saturday, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And half an hour after that ends, we have the private club called Planetary Healing Club. And you can access that at planetaryhealingclub.com. And that's for people who want to take this deeper and get into areas that we can't as freely talk about on the public forums because of censorship issues. And also getting into a supportive interpersonal group situation where we, give each other support and encouragement and work on ourselves with the ancient and modern information on natural healing, things that have been known for since before recorded history, actually, and adapt those to how they can be used now. It's very valuable because if your physical body is working well and you're not getting really distracted by physical degeneration and susceptibility to infectious disease and things like that that people think are inevitable and they are not. In other words, how to get back your natural maximum immunity without artificial or invasive type treatments or anything toxic. We'll talk about information on that, which is quite useful, as well as consciousness tools that can give you a whole new outlook on everything and be a source of a lot more contact with who you're actually always have been. In other words, what the rulers are very afraid of. And if you want to join us in that, you can get there through planetaryhealingclub.com. And you have my personal invitation if you are wanting to do that. In addition, in case we disappear off major platforms, you can still find us on brighteon.com, brighteon.com/channel/Lost Arts Radio, and subscribe. They have the subscribe feature activated now on brighteon.com. So use it, and that'll tell you when new posts go up there. And then if you have resources to support us and keep us on air and help us move toward our project of building the school, that would be really deeply appreciated. Not if you're struggling for survival, obviously, but if you've got some resources that are discretionary, that's what we're hoping to get enough of to do our larger projects. And the ways that you can support and donate those are are at lostartsradio.com at the donate button. Lost Arts Research Institute, our nonprofit, at the donate button there, or the subscribe star page at subscribestar.com/lostartsradio. And joining the club helps us too, but that's worth it, particularly if you want to work on yourself and you want to be part of an interactive platform that is a lot less likely to get shut down. We'll even change platforms if we have to, but the members will always go to the most secure platform that we've got available. What else? We're interested in any feedback on subjects that you'd like covered in shows, guests that you think would be great, and we'll try to learn more about those, or questions about what we're doing. You can always email to richard@lostartsradio.com. I think that's most of it. Annie will be back, and it's really important what all of us do right now, particularly in subtle, non-spoken areas, looking at changing your programming for your thoughts and emotions and actions and words, and all that's at a deeper level, and that really makes possible the effectiveness in the outer work, that whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's working at home, taking care of kids, or at some job somewhere, or in school, or cleaning up the floor in a bathroom, whatever you're doing, your state of internal awareness affects the outcome of everything. So that's what we're working on a lot, in addition to the physical parameters in Planetary Healing Club. And if you get to the point of wanting to join us, you're invited. Other than that, thanks for spending the time with us. And we'll continue to get these inspiring guests like Dr. Bukacek, which, is a great blessing to have people like that talk to us. So keep working on that for you. Hope you have a good rest of the night, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next time. Thanks.
Introducing Lost Arts Radio on subscribestar.com. Just go to subscribestar.com/lostartsradio to find our rewards program, offering 10 different giving levels starting at just $5 a month. We offer incredible value for any rewards level, from extra monthly interview videos not available publicly to subscription-based Planetary Healing Club videos once, twice, or three times a month, to private counseling sessions with Lost Arts Radio host Richard Sacks, to tech help with me, Doug Diamond. We even have one option where you can be the star on Lost Arts Radio as our guest on a specially produced show just for you. We conduct an interview with you and broadcast it to our growing network and listenership. Our Subscribe Star levels are one of a kind and offer great rewards for any budget. Please help support Lost Arts Radio. We can't do it without you. With increasing censorship on many of our channels, we really need your support today to keep doing what we're doing. As Richard says, we're not even at survival level yet. Lost Arts Radio has three weekly shows. Lost Arts Radio Live each Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, which is a live stream currently on multiple platforms in case we get banned from some of the larger ones. Right now, we're on two YouTube channels, Facebook Live, Periscope, which is Twitter, Twitch, and DLive. You can access these broadcasts by going to www.lostartsradio.com/live for all the links to those channels. The Planetary Healing Club meets right after Lost Arts Radio Live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights. And our Sunday show with guests airs at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Sunday nights on our Blog Talk Radio channel, our YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and on Brighteon. Be sure to sign up for our free email list just in case we do get banned on big tech's platforms. It's just a matter of time, really. They don't like the stuff we talk about, and they do not want the truth out there. In fact, they have already attacked us numerous times. Join our free email list so we can let you know where we are and how to access our shows. The sign-up button is right on the top right on most pages of our website. The best starting point for all things Lost Arts Radio is our main site, lostartsradio.com, where you can find the hottest news selection videos that we curate just for you. Those are on the homepage and added to daily, as well as articles and breaking news about information you really need to know. Our show archives, the 10 most recent shows, are right on our homepage, as well as our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/lostartsradio, or just click the All Things Radio Show tab right on our website. We're in the podcast directory on iTunes, and all of our shows except the banned ones are on our YouTube channels at Lost Arts Radio and at Diamond Disc. Our Brighteon page is really taking off, and we often have editors' picks videos right on their homepage. Visit brighteon.com/channel/Lost Arts Radio. On our site, you can also access our free listener forum as well as sign up for the Planetary Healing Club, which is just $25 a month, where you get private access to a one-on-one interaction with host Richard Sachs and myself and the other club members who participate live. More info can be found at planetaryhealingclub.com. We're providing solutions in there to make the world a better place. Come join us. Stay tuned because up next, you'll get to hear a really great song by an independent artist that we're doing our best to support. Go to lostartsradio.com/music for the full list of all the great songs and bands that we spin on our audio-only podcast shows. If you're in a band and want to submit a song for consideration for airplay on Lost Arts Radio, visit my website at diamonddiscaudio.com for more information about the music placement, mastering, and mixing work that I do. Thanks again for listening to and supporting Lost Arts Radio. We love having you as part of our family to learn, experience, and grow with.
Living in America used to be a dream for so many people far away and unseen, with their big cars, movie stars, living in America, all hail to the red, white, and blue. Living in America wasn't a dream. In this land, they tell you to reach anything you want, that everything is possible, just believe that you can. We're God's chosen children, living in America with that long house and my picket fences. Living in America was a dream. Now they believe that their Savior has come to deliver all their people back to the kingdom. Better not try to stop us all or get in our way, 'cause we
have what it takes to change the world again. Our queen and country follows us everywhere. Cause they've lost their voice, they've lost their way, and feel safe in our shadow. Now it's all gone, the glory days.